All right, that sounds cool and official.
Right.
Let's do it.
Aaron Williams, brought to you by cheese. Let's go.
Let's go. I mean, not just any cheese.
Not just any cheese.
Or
right.
Not just cheese.
Right.
Aaron Williams, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for doing this with us. Are you excited? We're excited.
Absolutely, guys. I mean, football's back, and the Bills are back, and it's just time for a great season.
What is, before we get into the details about the season and even this game against Houston, what is new in your life? You and I think have only spoken maybe twice, and once was at a roast, so I doubt we really sat down and, so to speak, broke bread or anything like that.
Right.
You know, you've been away from the Bills for about a decade now, if I'm not mistaken. What do you do with your time?
Yeah, time flies when you say it like that, man. I feel super old now that you say a decade.
I'm sorry.
But nothing much, man. Just helping out kids here in high school football down here in Austin and really working on my pickleball game and my golf game and just enjoying training kids. Hopefully make them better and reach their goals, whatever goals they anticipate to make in the future.
Pickleball. Right. We'll get back to that at some point.
Pickleball guy, man. Pickleball guy.
All right.
Do you do any media?
I still do media here and there, but nothing too crazy.
Okay. Yeah, well, Until now.
Dude, tell me about time flying. I have a son who just got a show here at the station. So it was a little hard to process, right? Yeah, congrats, but like, whoa, what? I'm finally settling into it being somewhat comfortable and not weird, although I'm making this sound weird now. Anyway, we can move along.
Whose roast was it? You were sick. Which was the one you missed, Chris?
Fred.
Fred Jackson.
When Fitz went.
Yes.
Wild.
That was a pretty interesting night, Aaron.
I was not there for that.
That
was a fun night. I will never forget that night, honestly. It was one of the best nights I've ever had.
Fitzpatrick got really loose.
Yes.
And, you know, what's better than that?
Right?
Okay. Well, these Bills, I mean, it's become a team that has been a consistent winner. You know, and then the playoff losses have happened. How do you sort of reconcile all of it? Like, are you somebody that thinks... And I'll tell you that I'm really not. Are you somebody that might think that like there's a certain flaw that a team has when it hasn't gotten over the proverbial hump in the playoffs? Like, would you say that about the Bills? Or, you know, on the other side of that coin, you might just say, like, you have Patrick Mahomes four times and it's, you know, close games. I don't know. Like, where do you come down on what this run has been like for them?
I mean, I guess when you're looking the outside looking in, you can say that. I mean, you go back to the 90s when we went four straight and it was always wide right. We had a little kicking situation. And then you look back into the last, 4 or 5 years with going against arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of Patrick Mahomes. Honestly, it's just we've always been right there, but for whatever reason, we just couldn't finish. And I think it was just more the probably – defensive scheme situation. I mean, 13 seconds left. I mean, the chances of them marching down that quick and scoring that type in that situation rarely happens in the league, to be honest with you. But some may say we have bad luck. Others may say we just can't get over the hump. Unfortunately, it's just the way it is sometimes in the game of football. Where you feel like you have it in the bag, you know, you get a little too excited, and you can never, you know, let down or just be excited when you go against a guy like Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's, you know, with a guy like me, I went against Tom Brady, and even with Tom, you never can just rest until that clock says 0-0-0. So it's just one of those things where we just been on the bad end of the stick, and hopefully that we learn from it and we can get the right pieces in some sorts of ways. But at the end of the day, we just got to learn how to finish.
Aaron, have you been on the ride with the Bills? I mean, I assume you're a football fan, but would you still consider yourself a Bills fan? Like, were you watching 13 seconds with your head in the hands like the rest of us?
I was definitely watching that game. I've been watching every playoff game, the Denver game, the Kansas City game. And to me, like, even as a player, I'm like, okay, the chances of them coming, marching down the field and getting some points aren't very likely. So I was super excited. I had everything booked. I had my hotel, everything booked for the Super Bowl. But, you know, like I said, when you play against generational talent like Mahomes, and then you got Travis Kelce and all those other guys who had different pieces, you can never just let your guard down. So I was very shocked. I've never seen something like that happen before. But it is the NFL, and you are going against one of the best in the world, so you can never be too sure.
I don't know that I want to go back to that game and get into details. We're almost there.
Yeah, I almost want to apologize for asking second question about it.
We're just getting to know each other here, but like the secondary, I mean, there are a lot of things, right? I mean, Bulldog was really put off by the fact that they didn't, you know, that they kicked a touchback. Right. I mean, force the return and
take 2 seconds off
whatever,
the clock even, whatever.
Right? You know, right. But, you know, the secondary. And then my thing was like, why are we rushing the passer at all? Why don't we just put everybody back? But it's so easy on TV and, you know, sitting out here like this. What about, Aaron, what about the Denver game? One thing that's been interesting for us with the Bills and their playoff losses to talk about is, you know, like, what do fans do? Who's to blame? And, you know, you have games where they scored in the 30s. But, you know, Allen had a pile of turnovers last year, but they still scored 30 points, you know. And then defensively, they weren't good enough to win despite his general excellence in the playoffs. So, I don't know. Do you have a thought on the loss last year? And was it surprising to you that they made a coaching change off of that?
Yeah, I think just like you said, with Josh's turnovers, those turnovers came at a very crucial moment in the game. And honestly, we can still talk about that crazy interception. Mm-hmm. Was it considered an interception? Was it a catch for us? According to the rules, I mean, down by contact when he has possession of the ball, it would be technically Bill's ball. But for whatever reason, they decided it was an amazing play. You can't take away from that player for Denver. But I think situationally, if we take care of the ball and manage that clock a little bit better, we wouldn't even be in that position to even try to distinguish, to let the refs decide whether or not to make such a transactional judgment like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you always look back at games, you're always like, man, what it could have, should have. But like I said, if we take care of the ball and be more better of the time management, I mean, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Former Bills defensive back Aaron Williams on the West Hur Hotline, going to be a regular part of our Football Fridays here on WGR. Well, Mike mentioned it. They did make a coaching change off of that game. And so Joe Brady is in, Sean McDermott is out. Along with Joe Brady comes Jim Leonard and a new defensive scheme. Aaron, we've been talking a lot through the spring and summer about just the lack of familiarity we will all have going into this opener with how Jim Leonard's going to do what he's going to do. It's a very different sounding scheme anyway than what Sean McDermott deployed. How much of a challenge is there for the players that are holdovers? There's a lot of new bodies too, but guys that were used to playing a certain way. I might be thinking about a corner like Christian Benford, who primarily was asked to play a lot of zone, and not that they're going to play exclusively man or anything. Even the most heavy man coverage teams in the league aren't even at 50% of the time playing man coverage, but still, there will be more of it. So, in general, I don't need to get too specific. In general, the challenges of defenders learning a new scheme and how to play instinctually within that structure.
Yeah, coming from, you know, me, where I've had different DCs almost every year, it is difficult to catch a rhythm and to really feel comfortable in a scheme. I mean, you really generally only got like a month. If you don't consider OTAs and minicamp, training camp's like a month, and you have that time to really deep dive in that scheme. But at the end of the day, it's always more comfortable to know that you understand a defensive scheme that you've been into for at least a couple of years, if not a year. So coming into a new scheme, a new coach, you're going to have to give our guys some grace and understand that this is a new scheme that we're getting ready to get into. But at the end of the day, we do got to be confident and be understanding that our guys are so professionals and they take their jobs very seriously and they're willing to do whatever it takes to win. So yes, there's a new scheme, but at the end of the day, those guys are professionals and know what they're doing and just got to take it week by week and not look ahead. You know, we're looking in Houston right now and let's see how we do in Houston and then we'll go from there.
Usually new defensive coordinators, this isn't true across the board, but like you get a new defense and it's going to be aggressive. Like nobody walks in the door and says, actually, we're going to play pretty passively.
It's never happened once.
And let we want to let this team sort of just trip on their own shoelaces or something. Like it's aggressive, but this is largely true here. Like there was, you know, zone coverage, try to win with four up front is by NFL standards, I would say a more passive style of defending than what Jim Leonard is purportedly going to be doing and having his players do. Did you have a preference? Like you mentioned all the different coaches you had, like were you more of a comfortable sort of letting it play out in front of you and reacting to that or attacking?
I prefer more attacking. But at the time the D-line that I had was very dominant. So I was very comfortable knowing that they were going to get to the quarterback. The couple D coordinators towards the end of my career were definitely more aggressive, more blitzing types. And that leaves a little bit of a hole in defense schemes. But at the end of the day, if you feel like you can trust your DBs to hold up more than 5 seconds per play, I think that type of scheme will work out. But, you know, I play with Jim and he's very knowledgeable about the game and, he's been very successful in his coaching career. So I have high praise for him and I have a lot of confidence that he will get the job done. So, really looking forward to seeing Ed and Bradley do their job up front and give our guys, you know, CJ Gardner coming in and hopefully, Maxwell, you know, has improved since his first year and, you know, just more, seeing how we can be more playmakers mm-hmm. and see how aggressive we can be. But and like I said, we'll just have to see. Like it's week one. There's nothing really we haven't seen or we can judge off of right now. So seeing what we do in Houston will be kind of a leg starter to what the season's gonna look like.
No kidding, Aaron, when you say you went through some defensive coordinators. I mean it was 5 in 5 years for you.
Yeah.
that's a lot of change. I mean, did that get to the point where it was just maddening? Were you? I mean, how much different do you remember it being year to year? The last year on the Bills, it was the same coordinator, but the first five were five different coaches.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you go from a defensive coordinator who loved more zone, and you have another defensive coordinator who loved more man. It kind of you really just got to depend on who's on your depth chart and how can you play to their strengths, understanding each player's strong ability on the field and how you can use that to the best of your ability. You know, unfortunately for me, it was find a way to make plays regardless of what defensive corner we had and what scheme we had. Our job out there was to go out there and try to win every game and, you know, do it to our best of ability. But our guys have done a pretty good job of holding up their end of the bargain so far. But like I said, coming in with a new defensive coordinator, it is something you got to have a little bit of grace and understand that we have to give our guys some time just to feel acclimated with what's going on because they don't have that chemistry yet to where we feel comfortable enough to be like, okay, yeah, we do have this and we do understand what's going on and what they're asking us to do. So, you know, just give time and let's see how it plays out.
Aaron, you mentioned C.J. Gardner-Johnson, a new acquisition on the back end there at safety, teaming up with Cole Bishop. And his resume, maybe the first line of his resume, is big personality. And, you know, it strikes me, we're getting reacquainted with you now. And, I don't know how much of a trash talker you were, but I can remember watching you in a Bills uniform. There was a lot of personality on the field. I felt like you were someone who, I want to say, go so far as to say you were trying to put on a show, but there was some flair there. And Gardner Johnson certainly brings that.
Yeah, not only does he bring that, but he brings experience. I mean, he's a Super Bowl champion. He knows what it takes to get to that level and get to that last game of the year. But you always want to have a guy that has a little bit of charisma and personality, because there are times where in the game where it's not going our way and we need someone to make a play or even just to boost the guys up. And that's the type of guy, type of leadership you need to have on your defense, especially a veteran guy like him. So I'm really excited to see. And it could help Cole Bishop a lot, just getting that experience and understanding how to slow the game down for him. This is still his second year coming in, so being around a veteran guy like CJ will be very well for him in his career, and I'm excited to see how they play out.
This matchup, Aaron, has been tough on the Bills with Houston, especially the games in Houston, where they haven't won in, you know, maybe 20 years. I feel like there's not a tougher game on their schedule than this game in terms of the matchup, but maybe that's overdoing it. What do you see? Like, here's a Houston team that's done a lot of winning as well, and they've been hell on the Bills' passing game, if not just the team in general, the last couple meetings.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's week one. It's kind of hard to go off mm-hmm. just something we haven't even seen yet, but I'm pretty confident in our guys holding up Nico Collins and containing C.J. Stroud. They have a good offensive scheme. The defensive side is really good with their, you know, secondary with Derek Stingley and Reed Blankenship. But at the end of the day, I'm always going to root for our guys, of course. And, yes, we've had a hard time playing against Houston, especially in Houston. But nothing's better than starting off the week one and getting that momentum going into the season with coming off with a win on the road and then getting ready to come back home the next week. So I'm excited to see how these guys come out and show what we're going to be seeing for the whole year.
Yeah, no kidding. Especially when you get that win against a tough opponent and it's in Australia, like last night.
I mean, yeah.
You get a 15-hour return trip home. at least you won the game.
That whole, like, I hope people understand, like, when you've got to travel like that, it really takes a toll on your body, especially that time difference. So for those guys to go out there and perform the way they did, it was just like, I mean, honestly, I was shocked and I was wowed about it, because, I mean, that takes a lot of toll on your body and the time zone and your sleep is all messed up. So, I mean, it's really cool that they got the experience to play internationally, but man, that I couldn't imagine doing that and then coming back and then getting ready to be like back on a regular schedule program.
You might have played in Toronto a time or two. That wasn't as long a trip.
not a long at all. Just a little quick hour and a half drive. No big deal.
I mean, I know that they had people and research behind it, but I never really could believe that the Rams' decision to just try to skirt the time change was really going to be worth it. I mean, again, like, smarter people than I thought it was best, but if you told me that the Rams would be so bad in that they were, I mean, at least offensively, if not overall, were pretty bad. You never see passes like that from Matthew Stafford. It's so pinpoint usually. I mean, I would have believed it, because how do you possibly expect to go that distance and then just sort of pretend like you didn't do it?
Yeah, Australia doesn't seem like a good idea for an in-and-out trip, I guess.
I mean, who would ever do that? So, not shocked.
It was surprising. I think that's the lowest scoring game they've had under Matthew. And I think defensively, I think we all expected a little bit more, especially now having Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald back and just the hype around the whole off season with them. Mm-hmm. I think we kind of expected a little bit more, but like I said, that time change is one of the biggest factors. And you know, kudos to San Fran. They just had a better scheme. They showed up more prepared, and they Rams got humbled, and that's just, it's better to be humbled now than later. So They'll take what they can get.
We brought this season and this game up yesterday, I think, maybe, Bulldog. Like your last year with the Bills, you went to L.A. and you went to Seattle, and we were talking then about Rex Ryan wanted to – I mean, it wasn't Australia, but he wanted to do that, right? He wanted to keep your watches set on Eastern time and, like, sort of get in, get out. And you had a nice win in L.A. that year. Seattle was also, like, that was a good Seahawks team, and you almost had them in that season. So maybe – I'm sure there are examples of both all over the place, but is that how you remember that year? Like, that was the strategy, try to not, like, necessarily acclimate to West Coast time and conditions, just, like, get on the plane, play the game, come home?
Yeah, I mean, every coach is different. Some coaches would like to – show up a couple of days before, be acclimated with that time zone or acclimated with that weather. And other coaches just want to keep the regular scheduled program and just not change, don't change or don't fix what's not broken. Mm-hmm. Every coach is different. You kind of just got to figure out what's best for the team at that moment and just kind of work with it. Luckily for us, we didn't have a crazy time change like Australia or anything, but even playing from East Coast to West Coast is a big difference. So it has been different in some coaches, but I do remember being asked, do we want to leave early? Do we want to stay and just show up that day and then be out the next day? So it all depends on what the coach is feeling and what the team is kind of accepting.
So what is game day like for you? What is Sunday like for you? Do you get together with friends? Are you more of a person that's sort of in your own, like, leave me alone, lock the door, I just want to watch all the games and, like, don't want anybody in my hair? Or are you, like, party guy? Like, what's the deal on Sunday, 1 o'clock?
Honestly, for me, it's been a while since I've watched a lot of football, to be honest with you. But I'm not really much of a guy to go out and be around a lot of people to watch the game. I really prefer just to have me, my dad, my brothers watch the game. It's a little bit of a controlled environment and a lot more comfortable than to deal with this Texas heat that we're having right now.
No kidding.
So right now, just be in the living room. We'll probably barbecue, order some food or something, and then just really enjoy every Bills game. And then after the Bills game, we kind of just watch the highlights. We don't really watch the other games, so...
Well, if we meet again next Friday, as I believe is the plan, we'll have two games to talk about because the Bills play Thursday night, opening the new stadium against Detroit. So it'll be more of a recap conversation on this game and especially that one next week. Thank you, Aaron. We're excited to have you be a part of our show here this year and enjoy the game and the weekend.
I appreciate it, guys. I love it, and I'm looking forward to more talks.
Great. Me too. Thank you.
There you go. Aaron Williams, his appearance here on WGR is brought to you by Treasure Cave, the official cheese of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
Ian Harditz of RotoWire after the update. Sammy P, next hour. He was pushed back today. Looks like we'll have Sam coming up normally at 2:30 on Fridays. I know that's when most people go to the dentist. 2:30.
Oh, I get it.
But that won't be it's already past that, and we have Sam coming up. Did I really need to do that? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
Two really good teams. We have a ton of respect for them. Josh Allen leading the way. Really great offensive line. James Cook, man, one of the best running backs in the league. So it's going to be a great matchup for us. But the type of atmosphere that I'm feeling like is going to be on Sunday is going to be that AFC Championship type feel. Like I said, two really great teams battling out. There's been battling these last 2 years since I've been here. It's going to be a good matchup for us.
Will Anderson, Bills at Texans, Sunday, 1 o'clock. We've got some 1 o'clock life back here to start the season. Not next week.
No.
With Al on Thursday night. Right. But after that, Chargers, Patriots, those are 1 o'clock games. Then they go to L.A. We'll see if L.A. is home yet for the game in Week 5, the Rams.
I think, I got to check, but I think they have games between now and then, so I'm pretty
but
sure they'll be home.
They might skip them. Yeah. They got to make sure they get their rest. Ian Harditz with us from RotoWire. We'll talk a little bit about last night, Wednesday night, and the upcoming Week 1 slate. Ian, we made it. Are you ready for some football?
I am. I really hope that some of the injury will chill out. But you know what? That's unfortunate what we sign up for sometimes. So Those wretched injury guys. But hey, week one, football's back. Can't complain too much, right?
When you I agree with that. when you do your projections, or even when you set your lineups, I like to look, and maybe this is like everybody does this. I don't even know. I don't think I've asked you this before, but I want to go right to the betting markets and the prop bet lines to see what they're expecting. Like DJ Moore's number is maybe 48 yards for this game, and like 48 yards. And we've talked about him before. I don't know. Do you do that? Do you have a certain tip for anybody trying to predict these games and set lineups, like how you do it personally?
I certainly do like comparing our RotoWire projections to see kind of, again, what the prop market is thinking of. Just, again, trying to find the right line where it's that, you know, player I'm excited about in the matchup, and then hopefully just an undervalued number. The one kind of thing I've been focusing on that, luckily, knock on wood, we're 2-for-3 so far this week, but historically, we do see zone-heavy defenses usually go hand-in-hand with running backs getting more targets and then wide receivers getting less, which makes sense when you think about football. Linebackers dropping back in the zone. They're trying to take away the intermediate stuff, and they rally up the check down. So the three plays I had this week were Ramondre Stevenson over his reception number, Christian McCaffrey as well, took until about 3 minutes left, but we got there eventually. Mm-hmm. And then DeAndre Swift is the third qualifier, where, again, it's a lead back with pass-catching ability, also facing a defense that has the same coordinator as last year when they ranked inside the top 10 in zone defense played. So only 2.5 over-under for DeAndre Swift. I think it's a nice plus 140 number. And my man's just got that nice little contract extension. So yeah, that will be the prop I'm riding with the most here come Sunday.
Would you want to be on DJ Moore in this game? We opened our show today really talking about this. I mean, it's a new head coach. He's the play caller. Moore is the shiny new guy. I noticed on Wednesday night, I thought New England waited. I mean, they didn't wait super long, but I think it wasn't until their third possession that they targeted A.J. Brown, which I would have thought, like, let's make these guys, they're down guys in the secondary, Seattle. Let's make them, you know, defend A.J. Brown. It's going to be a long day, that kind of thing. I feel similarly about D.J. Moore, who I know is not A.J. Brown, but for the Bills, he's the big, new, shiny, expensive acquisition. And, you know, they've had a tough time moving the ball at all against this Houston defense the last 2 years when they've been down there. So I feel like Moore should be a guy that they would want to feature.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. I'm just not so sure Derek Stingley's going to be out of his hip pocket long enough for that to really be right. Happening. So there's one man on this planet who can give Derek Stingley problems, and that's Kayshon Booty, his new teammate. So I will say, you know, DJ Moore, he's so good after the catch. We obviously saw that in the brief preseason moment where he took that crosser for a good 25, 30 yards, calling on the safety and everything out there. So I would like to think that Joe Brady can take some of those short, quick hitting, you know, screen source of action that they usually say for Khalil Shakir, and just get DJ involved early, because that is the one thing where I agree with you 100%. You're trying to work someone in on the new offense. You know, number one wide receiver, everyone likes to call them divas and this and that, but, you know, they want the football. They want to be able to contribute to the team, you know, for better and for worse. So just, again, designing a few early touches, just getting the ball in the guy's hands, maybe a reverse here or there. Look, DJ Moore, over these last couple of years, I mean, we have Ben Johnson actually lining up as a running back for portions of the game. That's how good this dude is with the ball in his hand. So, again, definitely one of those players where you should be able to scheme him up to football. Would love to see that, particularly two guys with Ty Johnson perhaps on the wrong side of questionable.
Right. With Ian Harditz, I mean, Allen and Cook, of course. I wonder how close Kincaid is for you to a must-start. You know, you and I play in some of these leagues where they're tournaments and drafts bleed into today and tomorrow, where you can actually move guys out of your lineup that played the last two nights. And in terms of tight end, if that's your, you know, your style, Kittle didn't get there. Terrence Ferguson was a hot item, didn't catch a pass. I know. really, the other game either. My guy Raerden, that was a nice little prop bet hit. One catch for 2 yards and a touchdown. I mean, there and the Bowers injury, Ian, like that's a crusher. So Kincaid gets pretty close to somebody you probably have to start and maybe want to.
Yeah, he's my tight end 13 or 14 or so. So I do have guys like Dallas Goedert, Jake Ferguson, even Michael Mayer ahead of him, because I'm just wondering if the Bills are finally going to unleash the dude. It's been great to hear that his knee apparently is back to full health. But, again, there's only so much you can do if he is going to be out there for more of a 50, 60% route rate, as opposed to that 75, 80% number that we usually see go hand-in-hand with the most productive tight ends in the league. So, again, nothing against Kincaid. His numbers last year for efficiency-wise, I mean, it was – a breakout year. If you look at wide receivers and tight ends, I mean, only JSN and Puka Nacua average more yards per out run than this dude. So can't say enough good things about the talent. And look, from the Bills' perspective as well, because I know us fantasy nerds can be annoying, like, oh, yeah, play this guy more. He's on my team and everything. Look, the Bills' offense has been a juggernaut for the past 6 years. They've used him in a part-time role because he's been banged up. I'm not faulting them by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just hoping that after having a full summer of health, where we've heard Joe Brady and Bean talk about the fact that they want to play him more, that we can actually go ahead and see that come to fruition. But similar to the George Kittle situation, I'm just kind of, and also Tucker Kraft to a lesser extent, I just really want to see that 1 week of usage evidence before we get too far in over our heels. But I will say, man, the four tight ends where we're just like ranking them where we are this week, but if we get that really good data point here in week one who could skyrocket up the ranks, it's Dalton Kincaid, it's Terrence Ferguson, who we unfortunately saw that not work out for, Aronde Gaston, and maybe even old man Darren Waller. Those are the four guys that I'm really keeping an eye on, because if we get that full-time role, they're going to be on the cover of all those waiver wire articles coming today.
Waller in Carolina. I like it. With Ian Harditz. So let's go two nights back to New England. A.J. Brown, IR. I mean, Henderson comes back. Dobbs was a bagel. What does – and May had a rough night, or at least a rough fourth quarter. Both of those teams, if we can just do that game here, Ian, what changes for you based on what you saw Wednesday?
Yeah, just unfortunate for the AJB because he looked like his usual baller self when he was out there, man. Should have had a 38-yard touchdown, pretty bad underthrow from Drake May, got the DPI, obviously then got injured, and he's going to be out for a good bit. So disappointing from Romeo Doubs, and unfortunately it just seems like they're going to be rotating these remaining four, maybe even five wide receivers, a la what we saw out of Stephon Diggs and company last year. So in this offense, I'm still going back to the well with Drake May, even for as bad as that fourth quarter was. He still ran for nearly 50 yards, and in fantasy land, having that rushing floor really can't make up for any real-life hiccups going on. And then Ramondre Stevenson, as much as, again, no rushing room. Shout out to PFF's Nathan Yonke for the wild stat, where I believe he only had 1 yard before contact on the entire game, and then he had about 50 after. So really wasn't much running room. But, hey, when you're playing this 80% snap, every down workhorse role, you tend to get enough volume to be just fine in fantasy land anyway. So cool with May, cool with Mondre. Everyone else just kind of seems like an annoying situation for now. And then meanwhile in Seattle, good to see my guy Drew Lock earn himself, what,
yes,
3-4 years worth of backup quarterback money as long as you can kind of – yeah, as long as you can show up that one time you're asked to every so often, you'll be fine. So that was fun. And honestly, it did bring back the memories of the other game he had, what, 2 years ago against the Eagles where – this is a dude, obviously has his limitations, but for better or worse, he's going to chuck that rock to his number one receiver, you know, as often as he can. So I do think for JSN, even if maybe we're ranking him more wide receiver 8 instead of wide receiver 3 without Sam Darnold in the lineup, it is encouraging to, again, see Lock go out there and do his thing. The more annoying part is just Jadarian Price, guys, because George Helani is someone that's taking passing downs. And then even though it was a limited sample, we saw Emmanuel Wilson, the former Packers running back, actually working a lot more near the goal line. So Price might be in that annoying between the 20s lead back role where, okay, if he can break a long run, we'll be fine, but we're losing the fantasy-friendly pass down work and the goal line work. That's more of a borderline RB2 than someone who needs to be in lineups moving forward.
I forgot about you and Drew Lock. That goes back a few years. I forgot about
my
that.
Guy.
Your guy. San Francisco, Kalen Black, Ian, like, I mean, he cut into McCaffrey pretty good, but maybe there were cramps and it's Australia. But is he somebody – you can't do it now probably, but is he somebody that you'd like to pick you'd recommend picking up next week, Niners?
Yeah, I don't want to hurt myself patting my own back, but he was on kind of the short list coming into this week of just, hey, you know, looking at the guys sub 20% owned in ESPN, Yahoo, he stuck out. So we had a little bit of question because Jordan James was banged up throughout training camp but wasn't even active in week one. And to Kalen's credit, he looked good. I don't think we're really going to be getting flexed, you know, standalone value here or anything. But again, one injury to CMC away from obviously being a weekly fantasy starter, I just wouldn't go too concerned, like hype up the concerns too much with CMC. We did have the cramps, as you mentioned. And at the end of the day, we're still talking about 8 targets, 18 combined carries and targets. And it's an offense that looked fantastic, guys, against the Rams defense that we all thought was going to be the class of the NFL this year. So touchdowns will come, and it's also just a situation where last season, even if Christian McCaffrey did not have a single rush attempt, he would have still scored more PPR points from just receiving than what Saquon Barkley had total. So there's just only so many running backs who even can dream of catching 100 passes in the season, and CMC is one of them. Also, the big concern coming in this year was, oh my gosh, coming off of 450 touches, how is he even going to look out there? He looked good, 6.8 yards per carry, again, against the Rams defense that we were expecting to be much, much better. So to me, it's like, yeah, it would have been cooler, I guess, to get a few more touches and maybe get a touchdown. It obviously wasn't the exact output we're looking for, but maybe you want to move CMC from RB3 to RB5 or 6, but you should still be pretty happy you have that dude on your fantasy squad.
Bulldog, though, the strip club did not work out last night. Ugh. That's not an ankle injury.
Right? I mean, I feel like I watched it 6 times on Twitter, Ian, and I never saw his ankle do anything that would look like an ankle injury.
I, contrary to popular belief, I'm not a doctor, so I'm going to go ahead and take their word for it for right now and say it's the ankle. But I just hope the dude gets okay soon. He was out there pretty much every single route before the injury. Obviously, it wasn't getting the ball, though. And I would caution that's the one, you know, sort of issue with dribbling. Obviously, balling out in the preseason, number 33 overall pick for a reason. I'm sure he'll have a bright future. But when each of George Kittle, Mike Evans, Christian McCaffrey, even Deebo Samuel looked pretty good out there, when all those guys are healthy, there's only one football to go around, it's going to be tough to trust this dude. That's anything more than a wide receiver 4 or 5 once he's healthy and ready to go.
Got a last-minute sneaky name for lineups for our listeners this week?
Yeah, longtime division rival. You guys are going to hate this dude eventually, but Chris Bell from the Miami Dolphins making his NFL debut. Someone where, again, if you are in these deeper leagues, I do think he's a good bench stash. Honestly, guys, if you have, you know, a few minutes this weekend, you're like me, you like to just put on some old, you know, player highlights and, you know, waste the night away. Chris Bell, Louisville versus Miami last year. I swear this dude will give you A.J. Brown vibes. So, 6'2", 220, reported 4.3 speed that you see on film. He's on a Dolphins team that loves to say in August, oh, we're going to run the ball, we're going to do this and that. A lot easier to say in August than when you're down 3 touchdowns at halftime every single game. So if Malik Willis can just be average and not horrible, Chris Bell avoided the pup list. He's already starting, going to be out there. I really think this dude could be a sleeper worth betting on. So Chris Bell, guys, remember the name.
Love that. We talked about him before the draft. He had an ACL in December
I was a fan of the idea myself. Like, take a shot. You shouldn't have to pay full price. And
the Dolphins didn't.
Now I hope Miami doesn't hit on it.
Yeah.
I think we all thought he was going to start the season on pup or IR. Yeah. And he just managed to actually be one of the guys truly ahead of schedule. So how about those peptides, right?
I mean, injuries aren't real anymore, unless they happen in the last 48 hours, because then it's all over the place. Thank you, Ian. Ian Harditz of RotoWire. We'll talk again soon.
Appreciate you, fellas.
Okay. Every Friday, we'll have a RotoWire guest on the show, getting people important advice. Chris Bell, somebody has to catch the ball. Even if they're bad, are they not going to throw passes? If they're bad, they're going to throw more.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. This is WGR.